Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, January 13, 2021. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Coronavirus Pandemic Day 305, Illinois Impact, State Releases County by County Vaccination Data, Region 6 7-Day Positivity Rate Trending Downward. The state of Illinois debuted county vaccination data, which will become a staple of our twice-daily online updates. The latest, Champaign County, 7,327 have received the first dose, 499 both doses. That's 0.24% of the population. Both its 7-day positivity rate, 9.2, and hospitalization count, 184, were down. But Region 6 still has work to do before being allowed to move out of its current Tier 3 mitigation phase, which regions can do as soon as Friday. Holding back the region that covers East Central Illinois, the requirement that its number of hospitalized patients decrease for 7 of 10 days. Region 6's total has come down to 4 of 10. It is the only one of 4 metrics the region hasn't hit. Among the 117 Illinoisans to lose their lives to COVID-19 Tuesday, a Douglas County man in his 80s, and a Ford County woman in her 80s. Illinois' death toll of 17,743 is sixth highest in the U.S. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. Election 2020. Representative Davis, bad advice led Trump to cry foul. By Steve Hoffman, Monticello. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis said he spends more time lately battling lies than fighting for the truth. Politics has become more about coming to places and talking about what is not true because of what they read on social media or have heard on certain stations that they get all their news from. Versus, what are we doing? The Taylorville Republican told a current events class Tuesday at Monticello High School. The 13th District Representative said he supported Donald Trump for president, but thought that bad advice from his legal team led to the barrage of unfounded claims of voter fraud, all of which were rejected in various courts around the country. They went 0 for 60. That's the result of every legal challenge that the president's team put forward. 0 for 60. 6-0. That's not a winning program. That's not a winning argument, Davis said. On Wednesday, Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol after the president exhorted them to march there at the end of a rally, breaching the seat of Congress as it convened to certify the Electoral College vote that declared Joe Biden as the next president. Davis that day included digging out gas masks in case they were needed, but he said the scariest moment came when lawmakers were evacuated from their chambers as rioters stormed inside. I was carrying my colleague down the stairs and we heard somebody say gunfire, said Davis, who at the time was helping a fellow lawmaker who has been undergoing treatment for cancer. Davis said when he returned to the building later that evening, after police had cleared out the rioters, it was a scene he will never forget. I saw tear gas on the first and second floor that I have never seen, a crime scene where a lady was shot trying to enter into the speaker's lobby and to get into the House floor, Davis said. And what will stick with me is the sheer exhaustion of the Capitol Police officers and other law enforcement officers who were sitting around some of our most hallowed areas of our nation's capital. They were exhausted from the fight. It was the second such incident for Davis, who was practicing for a congressional softball game in 2017 when a gunman opened fire, injuring six. That experience made me better prepared for what I went through on January 6, he said, during the 35-minute talk to students in Doug Kunde's class. I thought I'd rather not go for three strikes. I'd rather keep it at these two. Lawmakers were hustled off to secure locations for 5 hours before returning to certify the vote. While speaking out against the riots, Davis said he would vote against a second impeachment of Trump, explaining that he believed it was politically motivated. The impeachment of the president is being rushed through, he said. It has the potential to disrupt what our forefathers wanted the impeachment process to be, and I'm going to stick up for the Constitution tomorrow and vote against it because this impeachment is nothing more than politics. They are rushing this through for politics, and it has the possibility to cause more violence. Asked to what degree Trump is responsible for last week's violence at the U.S. Capitol building, Davis said in a separate interview Tuesday with the News Gazette, "The words he used, and that some of my Republican colleagues used, I hope they've regretted it. And at the same time, I hope Nancy Pelosi regrets the terrible rhetoric that he believes helped incite the shooter who attacked him and other House Republicans at the 2017 baseball practice," he said. On Tuesday, Trump said his remarks last week to a rally before the violence were totally appropriate. Champaign City Council, Black Lives Matter mural voted down. By Ben Zichterman, Champaign. The City Council decided Tuesday not to pursue a Black Lives Matter street mural in front of the city building. Members instead suggested an honorary street designation and started discussing other alternatives, such as supporting a Black Heritage mural project and providing more funding to programs serving the Black community before Councilwoman Clarissa Foreman effectively shut it down. "I don't think to try to do something to make us feel better because the street mural didn't pass is appropriate, and it's not playing well," Foreman said. "This is not what the discussion was meant for." Four council members voted to move forward with the street mural: Alicia Beck, Matt Gladney, Clarissa Foreman, and Mayor Deb Finan, while five voted against it: Will Kiles, Greg Stock, Vanna Pianfetti, Tom Bruno, and Angie Bricks. Everyone but Foreman voted to move forward with the honorary street sign, which would require a separate vote. Foreman said if someone wanted to set a study session for another option, she'd welcome that, but I'm not writing back home to my ancestors about an honorary street sign. Kyle said he received mixed feedback on the mural from the Black community. "Some of us believe that it's a great, great statement," he said, "but the overwhelming majority of us really want to see not just meaningful dialogue, but meaningful work." Kyle said he'd rather see more resources put toward the city minority contracting or gun violence programs. Several council members expressed support for the Black Heritage Murals Project, being led by Visit Champaign County. Restaurants versus Health Department. Lil Buford's owner come in with a twist. By Deborah Pressey, Urbana. Less than a week after a Champaign County judge ruled for a second time that a Tolono Bar and Grill can't operate without a valid health permit, it's open again for indoor drinking and dining. But with a new twist, Lil Buford's, 102 North Long Street, is open for the public to eat and drink there, provided people buy their food from a food truck or other restaurants and carry it into Lil Buford's to borrow its indoor tables and chairs. Owner Jeff Buckler said he would be selling prepackaged beverages starting Tuesday night, and food trucks will be parked outdoors today, Thursday, and Friday for people who want to buy food there and eat inside Little Buford's. Buckler contended he's allowed to open his establishment to people buying their food elsewhere as long as he doesn't cook, serve, or sell food at Little Buford's. He also said he's not making any money on this arrangement. "I'm just trying to prove a point that this whole thing is ridiculous," he said. The Champaign County Public Health Department suspended Little Buford's health permit last month for serving indoors in defiance of a state COVID-19 mitigation restriction, temporarily forbidding indoor service at bars and restaurants. After Little Buford's continued to remain in operation without a valid health permit, Champaign County Judge Ben Dyer first issued a temporary restraining order and then, last Thursday, a preliminary injunction stating the bar and grill couldn't operate as a food establishment without a valid health permit. Buckler said he went out to eat recently at a restaurant serving indoors in Piatt County and saw several couples from this area doing the same. "Everybody is leaving the county to go eat somewhere else," he said. Tolono Village President Rob Murphy said Tuesday he's waiting for guidance from County State's Attorney Julia Reitz, but plans to keep an eye on Little Buford's to see what's going on there and bring it up at the next Village Board meeting January 19. Reed said Buckler is well aware that he could have his permit back if he agrees to comply with current state rules. "It's very generous of him to encourage people to take their business and money to his neighboring restaurants who are protecting their staff and customers by limiting their business to carry out rather than simply agreeing to provide carry out and get his own license back," Reed said. "As far as his decision to serve packaged liquor, that is an issue for the Tolono Liquor Commission. The overall question of whether Mr. Buckler is in compliance with or in contempt of Judge Dyer's order remains to be determined." Jeff Lancaster, who owns Trackside, 4 East Holden Street, said he's complying with the health department because for him, it's the right thing to do. "Buckler is trying to protect his business, and what he does is his own business," Lancaster said. "Do I think he should be nicer to the health department? Yes, I do," he said. "He's choosing language that he probably shouldn't choose with those people, and that's his business." Lancaster said Buckler's current tactic of offering his premises to customers of other restaurants to eat carryout won't affect him. "We're obviously taking a hell of a hit, but there's not really much I can do about it," Lancaster said. Trackside is currently open Friday and Saturday nights for carryout, and its Friday night smoked meat dinners sell out every week, Lancaster said. "Tolono is a beautiful town," he said. "I've got my customer base, and we're happy with the way things go here," he said. Meanwhile, Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin said Tuesday the liquor and gambling licenses of American Legion Post 71 could be on the line if that establishment is shown to be open for indoor service, and the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District again suspends its health permit. She said a notice was seen Monday on the door of the establishment at 107 North Broadway, Urbana, stating it was open and wouldn't comply with what it called an unlawful request to close. Post Commander Bruce Brown Sr. said that notice had been posted earlier and that the post is closed. And while he removed the notice from the front door, he neglected to remove it from the back door. "I decided I was not going to fight them anymore," he said. The health district suspended Post 71's health permit last month for serving indoors in violation of the state order, but reinstated it December 31, after Brown promised to comply with the ban on indoor service. The posted notice states that Post 71 was being represented by Tom DeVore, the same lawyer who has represented Lil Buford's and at least two other Champaign County restaurants that fought the state ban on indoor service and had their health permits suspended. Please be advised that should the health department try and close our facility on an immediate basis without specific facts regarding an outbreak upon our premises, or if any of our licensure is wrongly threatened, we may pursue legal damages against the overreaching government agency, as well as the specific government employee who takes any such unlawful action, it states. Ruth Wyman, the health district's attorney, said Post 71 was closed when an employee in her office checked around 3 p.m. Tuesday. Marlin said she's had two letters from Post 71 promising to stay closed. The city could take action regarding the Post 71's liquor license if the health district should find that it is out of compliance and takes action first, Marlin said. The mayor urged the community to consider that the pandemic isn't under control. We are trying to keep people alive till we get people vaccinated, she said. From the Our County section, coronavirus response. It's scary, it's painful. Champaign County's first patient survived COVID-19, unsure medical community. By Marissa Plescia, Champaign. One of Gail Rogers' most vivid memories while in intensive care for COVID-19 was the doctors who would not come in her room, but instead peered at her through the inside window and gave her a thumbs-up sign. As Champaign County's first COVID-19 patient, the 52-year-old lawyer also remembers how unprepared the health profession was for the virus in March, despite 5 weeks' warning. How she spent hours in the emergency care waiting room at Carle Foundation Hospital in March on Friday the 13th, waiting to be seen before testing positive. How she was sent home that day, only to return a week later on March 20 in an ambulance. And eventually, how she was put into a hospital room and later the intensive care room, where it seemed that even the doctors feared to enter. The infection. When Rogers, who has asthma, started to have difficulty breathing along with a fever and a bad cough in early March, she thought it likely she had COVID-19. The virus was a primary topic of the news as cases in the U.S. had begun to rise, but Rogers said she understands now it was difficult for the medical field to be ready for the virus as health officials did not have extensive or detailed information on it. At first, Rogers contacted her primary care doctor at Carle Clinic in Mahomet. She was told to come in March 12. However, once she got there, the physician's assistant told her that she probably didn't have COVID-19 and sent her home. The next day, she went to the emergency room at Carle Foundation Hospital, still sure she had COVID-19. She said she sat in the waiting room for about 5 hours without any social distancing or mask wearing because at the time those practices weren't recommended. When she was finally taken into the ER, the staff put her in a hallway bed and gave her breathing treatment, where she was still surrounded by several people. She repeatedly told the doctor and nurse that she thought she needed a test. At first, they told her they didn't have any tests, she said, but they eventually gave her one. I practically had to beg for a test, Rogers said. I thought that was ridiculous when I had all the symptoms. The doctor sent her home after taking the test. Her positive result came back the next day. Several months later, she discovered she was charged almost $750 for this hospital visit because it happened before the CARES Act was passed, which is supposed to cover COVID-19 treatment. Infection from Italy. Roger's friends, wife and husband Chris and Dave Whippo, left to visit their daughter in Milan, Italy on February 20. On February 21, COVID-19 was all over the news, they recalled. While they were in Italy, they said they kept their distance from other people and avoided crowds, although they did travel to Switzerland. They returned to the U.S. on March 1, when many American students were returning because of alarms about the virus. They said the airports and airplanes were crowded, and there were several signs stating the symptoms of the virus, but little else. Both Whippos are retired healthcare workers. Dave was a radiologist and Chris was a nurse. They knew to isolate themselves after they returned from Italy and told friends that they were going to avoid seeing people. But they did see Rogers, one of their closest friends, on March 6th in their home. They watched a movie together while trying to keep their distance. "I regret that so much," Chris Whippo said. Looking back, Chris, who has connections at several nursing homes, recognizes that she could have been a super spreader had the couple not isolated when they returned home. "I'm in a lot of groups," Chris said. "I could have infected almost every nursing home in town." Second ER trip. After her first visit to the ER, Rogers spent the week resting and taking her asthma medication. But on March 20, her oximeter reading dropped below 80, and she had a very difficult time breathing. She returned to the ER by ambulance and was admitted into the hospital. At that time, there were 163 cases in Illinois and 5,619 nationwide. The doctors put her on the floor for COVID-19 patients and gave her an oxygen mask. During this time, Rogers said she received little communication from the staff. While the doctors sometimes spoke to her, she said they mostly waved and gave her a thumbs up through the window across from her bed. "I felt very much in the dark about a lot of things because I didn't know what was going on," Rogers said. "I got most of my answers through the nurses." The nurses also asked her to think of everything she may need at one time so they could reduce their contact with her. Despite that, Rogers said she was very happy with the care she received from her nurses, particularly one who kept her informed and also communicated with Rogers' daughter, who lives in Washington, D.C., throughout her stay. During that time, Rogers said she received hydroxychloroquine, a drug known for treating malaria, which was later dismissed by most medical experts as ineffective. She said it didn't help her, but she eventually received steroids, which did help. Despite feeling better, Rogers was told March 28 she had to go to the intensive care unit and be put on a ventilator because they couldn't keep her oximeter reading up. "When they said ventilator, I was worried I wouldn't come off," she said. "I didn't know how successful that would be." But Rogers did not end up on a ventilator. Instead, she was in a room receiving oxygen that had negative air pressure, and soon her condition further improved. She got her first negative test March 31, and her second April 1. She was then discharged April 2. The doctors originally wanted to send her home with oxygen, but did not because her insurance didn't cover it. By then, COVID-19 cases were surging, with 29,717 in the U.S. and 717 in Illinois. Carl recently stated that it cannot address any specifics about a patient's treatment, but that it always followed CDC guidelines. In general, Carl regularly treats patients with infectious illnesses and is prepared to do so as a facility specializing in this treatment, with a highly infectious disease unit and infectious disease physicians, the statement said. The principles of treating COVID-19 are consistent with how Carl treats other airborne infectious diseases, including use of personal protective equipment for patients and staff, negative air pressure rooms, and isolation for the patient. In addition, during this pandemic, Carl has consistently followed CDC and Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines. Isolating in Florida. While Rogers was in the hospital, the WHPOs isolated at a house in Florida. It was when there that they discovered Rogers tested positive for the virus. But when they returned at the end of March, they were able to pick her up from the hospital. Chris said she went over to Rogers' house almost every day to check on her. The WHPOs were never able to get tested themselves, but did experience a loss of taste and smell, which they did not realize at the time is a COVID-19 symptom. All of their symptoms were minor and faded quickly, they said. I'll never forget, I was reading the end of a New York Times thing, and it said, "This may be related to COVID. People are losing their sense of taste and smell," Chris said. I was like, "Oh my God," because it was different. I lost it for quite a while. Contact tracing. Rogers, who specializes in family law, went to court March 9, 3 days after seeing the WHPOs. She also went to her office at M2 on Neal. Judge Randy Rosenbaum, who was presiding that day, got a message from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District that Rogers was infected with COVID-19. However, her office received no word from the health district, according to the office manager, Suzanne Wingate. While the building is made up of separate offices, there are still common areas and bathrooms. Wingate said she heard Rogers had the virus from an attorney friend. After discovering this, she contacted Rogers to confirm she had it, and then reached out to the health district, which also confirmed it. Awais Vaid, deputy administrator and epidemiologist for the health district, said the reason Rogers' office was not contacted is because at the time the health district did not know how the virus spread and focused on people who had close contact. The WHPOs also did not receive a call despite Rogers giving the health district their phone number. Chris said she even called the health district but received no call back. "I thought it was really important to talk to us," Chris said. "I was really surprised." Vade said the WHPOs were not contacted because they hadn't already left for Florida, which meant they were out of the health district's jurisdiction. However, he said district staff called the Illinois Department of Public Health, who contacted the local government in Florida. When Rogers was first infected, she said the health district stayed in contact with her, but eventually it stopped reaching out and no one ever checked back in to see when she started feeling better. Vade said the health district had limited contact tracers at the time and stopped checking in on people who were fever-free for 3 days. "In March, we only had a small team of investigators who were following up on investigation and contact tracing," Vade said. "We were following the guidance to release people from monitoring if they were fever-free for about 72 hours and symptoms resolved. Although some symptoms would continue for a longer time, such as a lingering cough, we would still release them from our monitoring." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 13, 2021. Please stay tuned.